Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of Season 4 of the Fire Emblem Shrine Podcast. Today, with us, we have me, Shu, and Blazer.
Heyo.
We're back. If you have listened to our previous episodes, I thank you for sticking with us. I know some of the episodes might not be fantastic. And if this is your first rodeo, so to speak, then forget what I said before. We're fantastic, and this is going to be the greatest ride of your entire life.
Yeah, maybe. Your greatest Fire Emblem ride, anyway.
Right. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about today, actually. It's been surprisingly, there's been a lot of, Fire Emblem information put out since our last podcast. Granted, that was a while ago, but still, it's kind of unusual if you've been keeping up with Fire Emblem for the past couple years.
Oh, yeah, we didn't get a Fire Emblem, 11 didn't count in a lot of people's minds, and then 12 we didn't get, and, 13 took forever. So there's that huge gap where, the only thing keeping Fire Emblem alive was, hacks and stuff, which only a small portion of people actually, pay attention to those anyway. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a total, change of pace. You've got, three games worth of Fire Emblem content, and then, a spin-off, and we've got, four Fire Emblem characters in Smash, and then we've got, potential for Roy to come back, which I don't know if you guys have heard about that. How did that work? Roy's, in the data or something?
I don't know too much of the details about what's already in the game, so to speak, but pretty much what everybody's been talking about is that it turns out that there's going to be an announcement at the, I forget what it's called, it's like a Fire Emblem.
Oh, the 25th concert. Anniversary concert.
The 25th anniversary concert, some point this summer, I forgot the exact date. There's going to be an announcement there, and people are speculating that it's going to be Roy as a DLC character for the latest Smash Brothers game, which I am excited about because, I'm a huge fan of Roy. He's the poster boy of our website.
No, isn't that true?
Yeah, I know. It's,
We're both huge fans of Roy. I mean, Roy's been my avatar, most of the time. If it wasn't Roy, it was Luffy from One Piece, which is kind of understandable if you know me.
Yeah.
But, 90% of the time, it was Roy, such that people actually thought I looked like Roy in real life, which is kind of dumb.
To be fair, only dumb people were saying that. I mean, just
But,
saying.
Yeah, we both agreed we'd be, we'd easily dish out, $10 for Roy and
yeah.
Smash.
Oh, easily. And, that's the thing. I don't know if you've noticed, Blazer, but we're in the minority there. Not a lot of people really give a shit about Roy.
The truth hurts.
It does. It's annoying.
So the thing is that Sakurai is gonna be at that concert, and that's sort of the red flag. It's all right, why is the director of Smash Brothers at this Fire Emblem concert? Now, supposedly he likes Fire Emblem and whatnot, but there's with all the Smash DLC talk and whatnot, and the fact that Lucas is returning and Mewtwo returned, it's a pretty safe thing to say that there's a chance Roy might return. The only thing is, if he does, it's probably going to be you probably won't be another clone of Marth, or if he did, that would be really weird and kind of sucky, actually.
Right.
We already have Marth and Lucina, then we have here's a male red-haired Lucina or something. People who don't know Roy would just be what the hell? This is the worst cop-out for a new character I've ever seen. And, I kind of have a hard time disagreeing with them unless they actually changed up Roy to be unique.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, too. Nobody wants to see another clone, but, I'm taking what I'm getting at this point. I've been starved of Roy for far too long. It's been many years.
Oh, yeah, say that again. All right, but Roy's side, we've got the main focus is Fire Emblem IF, because we've been getting a ton of news about that game. It's coming out in a month in Japan, which is we only found out about it a few months ago. So it's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, really. That's something unusual across pretty much all games, really. For a game to get announced and then released shortly afterward. Granted, it's not a worldwide release, which
is also
unusual.
No, for sure. I for sure agree. Especially nowadays, because like the dev times are so much longer. You know, people announce games like 3-4 years before they actually come out, and like people get pissed off, like, you know, what happened to that one game? I mean, I hate to like fire shots, but like Final Fantasy 15, like, when did we first hear about that? 2008 or some BS? Like,
oh, dude. I remember hearing garbage about that. I mean, I don't know. It feels like Square announces like 3 Final Fantasy games in a row, so you can never really keep track.
Right. But yeah, point being, though, you know, it's you know, like 6 months to release, and then hopefully we get it. We're supposed to get it 2016, for those who haven't heard. But, you know, we'll see what that means. It could mean early 2016. Games have come out early before, so I don't know if the translation happens fast. It could happen faster.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking, some people are kind of pissed off because, and this is understandable, because like that's like what, like at least a 6 month delay until we get it. Mm-hmm. You know, like yeah, I want my Fire Emblem too. I think the problem here is that unlike say Pokemon, where you don't have any voice acting, with Fire Emblem, like now the game's like fully voiced, right? You've got all these different voice actors for all these different characters.
And a lot of text.
Well, yeah, of course a lot of text. I mean, it's a huge RPG. Not only that, but with this new series, now you have, like... It's said that each route is, like, the same amount of content as Awakening. Mm-hmm. So you've got at least, like, 2 times the amount of text, maybe 3 times the amount of text in the whole game. That's just, like, that's crazy. That's, like, an insane amount of text for them to translate. So, I want it too, but I kind of understand why it's taking so long. Objectively speaking, right?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's one of the things. I'm not one to complain about release dates for games, other than like, you know, just like, oh, you know, I wish this game was out soon because I want to play it. But I mean, I want developers to take their time with games. We've seen it happen so many times where a game gets released and everybody's saying, I really think that they should have took their time with this because there's a lot of flaws.
Right, yeah, lack of polish, lack of whatever, and I mean, in this case, the biggest thing is gonna be, like, the translation, but I mean, there's been some freaking awful translations, too. You know, I'm not gonna go off, like, listing all of them, but you definitely want them to take their time, because, like, you'll notice, you know, like, especially after Awakening, they did a pretty good job with Awakening. If they, like, slacked off and just, like, rushed it and, you know, threw the games out, like, people would legit be disappointed. So, I mean, yeah, it's like you said, you know, like, yeah, I want the game to come out as soon as possible either, but I kind of want them to, like, you know, take however much time you need. Just don't take
exactly.
any longer, right?
Exactly. And do it right. So, yeah, let's dive into this information that we got here. Since the game is going to come out soon, we got quite a bit, actually.
Let's start with just last week. So that Japan has their magazine, the Famitsu magazine, and this is like the big thing where they like show off games and tell details and have interviews and stuff. So they really gave us some interesting information. One of them was Phoenix Mode. Have you heard about that too?
I haven't.
You haven't? Okay.
No.
Well, let me surprise you. So you remember Classic Mode? You know, the usual thing us Fire Emblem players have been playing for like years.
That's the only thing. That's the only real way to play Fire Emblem, in my mind. You know, whatever.
Okay, sorry guys in advance. 2 Fire Emblem elitists right here. So but yeah, we've got the classic mode, permadeath, right? And you got casual mode. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that exists, right?
Casual mode is what you would make your, you know, kindergartner little sister play.
That's actually true though, because I've been trying to get my little sister into Fire Emblem. And, like, she kind of likes the Fire Emblem Awakening, but it's, like, she doesn't understand the whole, like, strategy concept of, like, you know, I gotta, like, put my units here, and, like, what do I do? And she's, like, she's so scared of moving her units anywhere. Like, she's, like, what if this is, like, the wrong spot? Like there's, like, all these other squares I could also move them to. Like, what do I pick? I'm just, like, relax. Like, you're in, like... easy mode, casual mode, like, you can't lose, okay?
Like, hardly any repercussions.
But that aside, I mean, there are some people who, you know, strategy games maybe aren't really their thing, or maybe it's so stressful, or they want it for the story, quote-unquote. So for that, there's Phoenix Mode. And then that's where Fallen Allies, they get revived on the next turn. Which is kind of crazy, because I'm kind of imagining this, and how do you see this, like, so how do you see this actually playing in? Like, let's say my unit dies, and then an enemy takes it over. Like, what happens on the next turn, right?
Like, if an enemy takes that space.
Right, you know, like where would the allies return? Are they going to return just, like, to a designated spot on the map?
I don't know. If the way that works is they normally revive just in that spot... Is that how that works, or do we not know?
No, we don't know. That's why I'm curious. Oh, okay. All it says is that allies are resurrected on the next turn.
I know. If it is the case where they get revived or right in the same spot, then that is almost a little bit game-breaking to me, because, I mean, come on. You can just roll over dudes.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking, too. You just, like, send in your army and... You're essentially just have an immortal army that regenerates. I mean, Phoenix mode is actually a very, like, aptly named mode, because that's literally what it is. Your units are all phoenixes. They're all immortal. They just revive.
They're all zombies.
If I were the enemy in a Fire Emblem game playing against Phoenix mode, I would be fucking terrified. These guys are just like zombies reviving in the squares. But what I'm thinking is... Either they're going to revive in, like, the closest square next to where they died, or they're going to revive in, like, a designated spot. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there's, like, a base camp or some kind of square where the main character starts or something, and that's where they would revive. I can see that being weird, too, because, like, so you know how Hoshido is going to have, like, more complicated chapter goals and such?
Yes.
So, like, what if one of them is, like, escape the map or something, right? And your unit revives at the beginning of the map, because that's how Phoenix mode works. Mm-hmm. That would be really weird, because then your unit dies and you have to escape the map, but there's all these enemies over there, and you're just stuck, like, dying and reviving and dying and reviving. You just, like, can't get out.
Yeah, I don't know. That's how really I would play if they had Phoenix mode back in the first time I played through Sacred Stones. That's probably how that would happen. Because I was terrible at that game. But yeah, for those that don't know anything about the new Fire Emblem game, first of all, crawl out from under your rock. Second of all, what's happening is the new game is split into two, kind of like the Command & Conquer games, if you've ever played those, in which case there's two factions, and then there's separate games for each faction, and then the factions fight each other. And, I mean, that's that. The games are two full games that you have to pay for, both of them. And that's actually catching a little bit of flack on certain circles online, from what I can tell. And I gotta say, I don't see it. I think that's perfectly fine, especially with, I mean, Pokemon does that, like, every other year, and people just eat it up. I don't understand it. I mean, Pokemon makes the same game half the time anyway, so... I don't know. I don't get it. And these games are going to be way more different than the Pokemon editions are from each other. Mm-hmm. So I don't see what the big deal is, especially when they're cutting you a deal for buying both of them at, like, the same time.
Yeah, I kind of think it's similar. You know, with Pokemon, people some say, like, oh, it's been established or whatever, and, like, oh, you're only supposed to buy one game. But, I mean, like, they're actually being really fair about this. I think maybe it's just a lack of knowledge or something. I kind of get, like... You know, in the industry, like, nowadays, like, most companies are, like, you know, they're just trying to steal your money, right? Let's be honest. So, right. I kind of get, like, why people can say it's a cash grab, but from what they've been saying, like, I've been reading up on the game, obviously, you know, that's kind of my job anyway, but, like, they're saying, like, oh, it's completely different games, like, each game has the same amount of content as Awakening, there's completely different new classes and weapons, like, exclusive to each mode, exclusive characters... exclusive, like, cutscenes, you know, like the CG cutscenes and all
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
You know, obviously different maps, different chapter goals. And, like, this sounds like two completely different games. What it really sounds like to me is they're releasing two Fire Emblem games in the same world at the same time, which is just sort of weird. It's weird because, like, alright, let's take the opposite case. Let's say they didn't do separate games. Then how would it work out?
I don't know. Be two discs.
No. Let's say it had to be one disc, but they had twice. They had two games worth of content in one disc. What's the natural thing to do in that case?
You know, buy the game.
Well, yeah, okay, but Okay, as a developer, what are you going to do if you're including toys?
Oh, from the developer's point of view.
You're going to jack up the price, right?
Or make it like, you know, $80, which would be the price of the two games combined. Because that's $80 of content. And people would probably go nuts about that too.
Right,
but I mean, that's not even what they're asking, because if you buy one of the games, you get 50% off of the other game. That's so a DS game is $40, so that's $20 for a DLC download of the other half of the game, essentially.
Right, which and is you also get, I don't know if this is mentioned, but you also get extra save slots too, apparently. So like, so it's super nice, because now you have like, you have six save slots as if though you have two different games. So they're really not like cutting you out of anything, right?
No, exactly. And it's this price of like an Xbox game or a PC game or a new release, something like that. And I mean, I guess there are people that complain about, I mean, those prices, but those people are, you know, penny pinchers and I don't care about them. So there's that.
I mean, and ultimately, you're getting a ton of content here. The thing is, like,
exactly,
you know, that's all it comes down to. They're giving you options, right? If you only want to try one of the games, and maybe you don't like it, maybe you're like, I don't like this FE14, I don't like where Fire Emblem as a series is going, then you've only got to put down $40 for the whole thing. If you love it, go buy the other route or the extra scenario or whatever. Like, you know, give as much money as you want to Nintendo. But you're not forced to put down like $80 for everything at once just because that's how much content they're putting. I think it's really nice. And most companies wouldn't give you this many options. Most companies just like, give me all your money or you get nothing. Like, straight up.
No, exactly. And I mean, a lot of companies would probably withhold that deals, half of the game, until 5 months later, even though
I mean, there's games that have literally held back the true ending of the game as DLC. Like, let's be honest, this isn't anywhere near that bad. It's not really bad at all.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of Doomsday gamers that will cry the fall of, you know, everything new in the gaming industry, and price is a big one of those things. And, I don't know, it's annoying.
Yeah.
And even if you want to pay $80, you have that option, because they get you, there's supposed to be some kind of limited edition thing for $80 where it gives you both sides of the game, a third spin-off game type thing, and some other bonus stuff. I don't know the details on it.
Right. Yeah, Japan has their, you know, crazy limited editions. You probably get like a, you know, an art book and a soundtrack and, you know, the usual stuff. But like, you're getting the for the price of two games, you're getting essentially like three games and a bunch of goodies. So, like, if that came to the West, I would totally hop on that.
Oh, for sure. Dude, it's totally worth it. Totally worth it.
In fact, it's a steal, because I'd have so much Fire Emblem games to deal with, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I would be kind of pissed off. I'm like, I have all these Fire Emblem games to play. Which one do I play?
I mean, at the end of the day, what matters is, did you get $80 worth of entertainment out of this super cool limited edition, I mean, content that
you purchased.
And I think, this is all speculation, of course, but I think it's going to pay off. I really do.
Yeah, same here. I think if you're a Fire Emblem fan, you shouldn't be disappointed in this. You know, they're giving you a lot. But ultimately, we'll see. You know, reserving judgment until the final game, that goes both ways, for better or worse. You know, but so far it sounds, you know, I'm interested.
You know,
they have my curiosity piqued.
Oh, absolutely. We should dive into some of this other information.
Cause... Oh yeah. Oh man, there's so much. Abolishing weapon durability. Oh man, that like it started kind of a storm on the internet. Weapon.
So for you know, explain what that is for people that don't know.
I mean, it's what you know. I don't even know how to put it. Like weapon uses. You know that. You know how like you use a weapon and it goes down by one. That system's gone.
Well, you know, it's an amazing feature.
The only other game that... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was joking.
Okay. The only other game that apparently had that was Gaiden. So, you know, now apparently you have a weapon, you can use it infinitely. It doesn't break.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's cool. I like the weapon use system overall. It seems like they're trying to, you know, take some risks, change the series a bit, you know, make things interesting. what they said here is that they've tried to make players think hard about which of the various weapons they should use in a given situation. And what I've seen is that apparently some weapons can reduce the enemy's critical rate or increase your critical evasion. Some weapons can increase your general evasion. You know, some weapons are difficult to attack twice with, like if it's more powerful, which is kind of like the weight system. When was the last time you saw weight, by the way?
Oh, I don't even know.
I can't even remember outside the GBA games. Like, has it even shown up?
I don't think Tellius so.
Might have had it, but...
Did it? I don't know. I never paid too much attention to Tellius' game, to be honest.
But yeah, you know, they're, it seems like they're making changes. I think it's... Fire Emblem is the kind of game, like... It's really hard to fully grasp until you play it. So I'm kind of curious to see how well they balance this.
No, exactly. And I mean, that's the way I think that people should approach every game, is that you don't really know anything for certain until you play it. It's cool to be optimistic for a game. It's cool to have, you know, doubts. But at the end of the day, every game deserves a chance. I mean, before you make any sort of final opinion on anything, you should try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's just my opinion.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's definitely neat. And on the topic of weapons, this is somewhat more recent news, but we also have a change in the weapon triangle. So now we've got these new weapon types. We have swords and magic are pretty common, or, you know, they've appeared in Fire Emblem a ton of times. We don't have split magic anymore, like thunder, wind, and fire, but we just have one big old magic. We have axes and bows are grouped together now. So that's interesting, because bows have been thrown into the mix for the weapon triangle for... I'm pretty sure this is the first time in the entire series that bows have been a part of the weapon triangle.
Yeah. And, no, exactly. It's the first time it's been in the weapon triangle, but I'm honestly not that surprised that it's getting thrown in with the axe, because... I don't know why, but there are a lot of axe classes that also can use... bows. They just happen to be able to use bows for actually, whatever reason. Yeah,
that's kind of a good point.
They've been doing that for a while.
Yeah. And I try to sometimes think of Fire Emblem in terms of you know, okay, how actually practical would this be? Now, I know it's not the most realistic game, but, you know, we have swords, we have the whole weapon triangle, as is right now, is swords and magic beats axes and bows beats lances and hidden weapons or dark weapons. You know, right now the terminology is, you know, kind of shaky because, you know...
I'm sure they'll change it by the time it comes to the West.
Right. They'll come up with either a really terrible name or a really good name. So these hidden weapons are things like shuriken and... I can't remember everything else, but we just... I should probably look it up. But they have some weapons for maids, butlers, and shinobi or ninja that are like... I guess hidden weapons is in this is the kind of weapon you would like keep on your body, you know, as opposed to like out in front of you, like a sword or a lance or a bow, if that makes sense.
Like a shuriken or butterfly knife.
Right. Yeah. These are hidden weapons is in, you know, kind of hidden on your body. It kind of goes with the whole trope of, I don't know if you've seen, maids and butlers will oftentimes carry like needles or threads or.
That's some kind
of weapon hidden on their body. Like, they look harmless, but then they, like, take it out, and they're actually, like, capable of using a weapon.
That's totally an anime thing, and I love it. It's so funny. It totally is,
but, you know, that's just where Fire Emblem is going right now. They're trying to take inspiration from different things. I think it's cool. You know, they have the Western side thing.
I mean, I don't really know. I'm sure there are a lot of Fire Emblem purists out there that are going, I just don't know about these changes. But, I mean, okay. That's the thing about video game developers is that with each installment, Fire Emblem is a long series. With each installment, you have to make a – you need to find a weird balance between innovation and not completely alienating everybody that's been playing your games by right. – completely overworking the formula. And honestly, I think people just need to keep a more open mind with these things. Like I said before, you gotta give everything a shot before you really come up with a final opinion on it.
Oh yeah, I would actually argue that this game is actually kind of fan service. The reason why I say that is because this has been known for a while, but you have the two routes, Hoshido and Nor. And Hoshido is you know, was pretty much admitted by the developers to be like the more Awakening route. It's more approachable, it's easier, it's more casual, you have a world map, you can skirmish or grind or something if you need to. And then you have the Nor route, where you have limited experience, limited shop access, limited money, and you have more diverse tactical or chapter goals, and you know, supposedly it's harder and there's more tactics involved. So the latter route sounds more like it's trying to appeal to older Fire Emblem fans, and the former route seems like it's trying to appeal to newer Fire Emblem fans. And while each route does have, you know, the story differences too, really to me this seems like a great way to kind of, you know, lead people in without making them feel too alienated or weird, right? Like, you know, if you prefer this style of game, you can try it. You get used to, like, all the new FEF mechanics, and then maybe if you like it, you can try the other route too, even though, you know, it wasn't, like, really designed as much for you, right?
Right. And, yeah, no, I mean, that's, I think that's a really good idea as well. It's, because, I mean, these types of games, those tactical RPGs, turn-based, they're not exactly super popular. I mean, they've got a pretty good following, but, I mean, nobody, not very often are you going to walk by a GameStop and see a big Fire Emblem poster by the door.
Yeah. Oh, I wish, because I'd, like, pay $10 for that. But...
Oh, definitely. Definitely, man.
No, for yeah, sure. That's totally how it is, though. And they've also admitted that that's where the series is going. If they don't want the series to die, you know, they've got to make some changes. They've got to open it up to new people. You know, they can't just live off the same, you know, 20,000 hardcore fans to keep buying the game. You know, that's just how it is. And honestly, while the new Fire Emblem games might be different, it doesn't seem bad per se. And I'm still going to reserve judgment until I actually play, you know, everything all the way through. But, you know, so far it doesn't seem like it's bad. You know, Awakening had, like, the highest rating in the entire series. So clearly they did something right there, right? It was different, but clearly they did something right. You know, we'll work on the story and the, you know, the pair-up and the other things that were kind of OP or not that good or whatever. You know, there's a lot of that. Speaking of pair-up, have you heard about pair-up? Because that's another one of the topics that's been touched upon.
Pair-up, it sounds like... That thing from Awakening. Why do I forget what it's called? The where you had.
Are you talking about
two people?
Are you talking about pair up? The same term in Awakening.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
literally
you know
what it's called.
Well,
yeah, no, there are some changes for pair up apparently. But it's kind of vague right now. We haven't got like the official word on it. But what it's sounding like is pair up is nerfed. I think that's kind of huge because that was a huge complaint in Awakening, wasn't it?
Is that it was way too powerful.
Right.
Yep, that
right.
was a big thing.
You pretty much had no reason to not pair up your units except for like very specific strategies. Like, okay, let's say you have like 8 units on the map. If you're like there are like some cases you wouldn't want to pair up just so that you could attack with more different units, right? It's like having more turns, right? But aside from that, like your units were like twice as powerful with pair up. Not only did you have the stat bonus, but you could, like, switch members to protect them. You had, couldn't they, like, give bonuses to the other unit, too, like, to movement and stuff? Yeah, they did. They gave bonuses to all the stats. And you had the dual strike and the dual guard chance. So you could, like, you could have all these double attacks that would do massive damage. Massive damage to the weak spot or whatever.
Massive damage to the weak spot.
You'd have them like blocking attacks. Like it was kind of stupid because you could like one run the final boss even on lunatic mode just because pair-up was at LP. But it seems now they've nerfed it. And we'll hopefully cover this, you know, in a later podcast or something once we have like more clear details. But it seems like you can only choose to attack or defend at one time. You have like an attack stance or defend stance. And that sort of, you know, forces you to decide, okay, am I going to, you know, play offensively or am I going to play defensively? If your units are, like, next to each other, then they can support each other via attacks. If they're paired up, then I think they can, like, defend each other, but they can't, like, move as effectively or something. So hopefully we'll see how that goes. But overall, I think that's something everyone really should be happy about, you know, because you're playing a strategy game. If the game's too easy, you don't really feel satisfied. Am I right?
No, yeah, definitely. And I mean, this is coming from a guy who doesn't like to play mind-numbingly difficult games, but even I don't like to play games where I'm just rolling over all of the opposition. I want to be challenged somewhat, you know, and pair-up really made it easy to just turn your army into a tidal wave that just washed everybody on the battlefield away.
That's actually a great analogy. And what I was joking about, and this is just a joke, it's like, you know, don't take offense. I know there's some, you know, people who love Fire Emblem. But so now we have the casual mode, or not the casual mode, the Phoenix mode, right? We've got the Hoshido route, which is an easier route, right? And then we have the return of, like, the difficulty modes. I think there's normal, hard, and lunatic. There might be a Luna Plus. We'll see. I haven't heard about it. So I was thinking, like, all right, remember Auto Battle in Fire Emblem Awakening?
Yep.
Yeah, completely useless, but it was totally there on the menu, right? Mm-hmm. I was thinking, if you put normal mode together with the Hoshido route and Phoenix mode, you could probably actually auto battle the entire game if you wanted. Let's be real here, alright? The only thing that really matters is that your main character doesn't die in Phoenix mode. If your main character dies, I'm assuming it's a game over, because there has to be some way to get a game over.
Right? Yeah, come on.
So, essentially, as long as you auto battle and your main character doesn't suck, which, let's be honest again, your main character is probably going to be, like, the best character in the game. You know, if you've played FE12 or FE13, the Avatar is, like, the best unit, hands down. They're completely broken, all right? You can solo the game with the Avatar. So, like, it doesn't really matter. You can, now that the Avatar is the main character, you could probably just auto-battle and win most of the game.
That's crazy.
But only on normal route, Hoshido with Phoenix mode. Maybe casual mode. Maybe.
Well, who knows?
Right.
So, there's a couple new classes, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I'm not sure. Did we touch over them? The maids and the butlers and the shinobi?
Kind of. I don't think we got into them. Too deeply. I think we didn't mention shinobi.
All right, so why don't you go into that shinobi/ninjas? People haven't really decided, so you'll hear us call them both. But why don't you get into that, Jay?
There's not a ton of details about them. We talked earlier about how these are classes that are probably going to specialize in those hidden weapons with the, you know, shuriken, switchblades, I don't know, cyanide pills. Something like that. There's butlers and maids, which we're kind of thinking is going to play into the fact that the conflict between these two kingdoms, Soshida and Nor, are obviously the royal families of both of these kingdoms. So they're obviously going to have some maids and butlers who also happen to be incredibly deadly if they take you to the field. So it's going to be interesting. You're now in your Fire Emblem armies. You're going to have people in suits and little dresses running around throwing knives at people. So that's exciting. I don't know about you, but I find that incredibly enticing.
I can't tell if you're serious or not.
I can't either, to be honest.
It actually does sound a little bit exciting. What I find hilarious is, like we're having completely new weapons we've, like, never seen before. We have iron and steel shurikens. You know, like, iron shuriken, steel shuriken, silver shuriken, brave shuriken. I'm just kind of imagining these, and, you know, Fire Emblem really is changing, so maybe I'm just having a hard time coming to grasp with that. And then we also have, we have the Eastern theme of Hoshido and the Western theme of Nor.
That don't know, Nor is supposed to be, like, the darker, more medieval army. I mean, you've kind of seen it in Fire Emblem before, and Hoshido is supposed to be that, you know, Japanese mostly style kind of things with all that weird plate armor as well as ninjas.
So with Hoshido, for instance, they've got katanas instead of swords, naginatas instead of lances, maces instead of axes, and batons instead of staves. So I find that really interesting. Apparently they're making, like, different sets of equipment for each thing. And maybe that's just, like, an aesthetic. Maybe they're effectively the same weapons. The stats are slightly different. But I still think that's really cool. We have different classes. Like, apparently we have a Oni and a priestess. So, you know, I'm not totally getting the class difference, but you can clearly see, like, it's actually kind of funny, because wouldn't you consider the older Fire Emblem games to be more medieval or even slightly more inspired by Europe, wouldn't you say?
No, I would definitely say that. I think that pretty much every Fire Emblem game has kind of been mostly inspired by medieval and stuff like that, just in the classes and the look of everything. This is actually the first time that you're really, really seeing a lot of the influence from the history of, you know, the country that the games are developed in.
Right, right. And what really strikes me is we were saying earlier how Hoshido is more suited to the older fans, and or the other way around, Noor is more suited to the older fans, and Hoshido is more for the newer fans. I find that interesting because it's sort of a parallel with the actual fans in that, you know, Hoshido is, you know, the art style and the character design takes more from those older games. And or, I keep confusing them.
Noor is taking more from the older games.
Noor is that route. And Hoshido, which is inspired more off like Japanese culture and whatever, you know, it's kind of more suited to, you know, how Fire Emblem has become a little bit more anime and, you know, some people say it was always anime. Well, yeah, to some extent, but you know, now you have like the, you know, the blushing and you have the CGs and, you know, the character designs are just a little bit more out there and they look less, I guess medieval or European than they used to, just a bit. So, I mean, I would argue that, you know, even in that, there's sort of a distinction, a separation between the two routes, even in the art style and the designs.
Right, right. So here's my question to you, Blazer. Team Noor or Team Hoshido?
Oh, God. I mean, the obvious answer is I'm going to play both because I'm a nerd with
Noor. Oh, well, definitely, but, definitely. I think that goes without saying.
But if I'm supposed to actually answer this question, okay, let me hear you. Hoshido, Noor. I really like, I do like Hoshido quite a bit. Mostly, I just like the character designs more, which I know it's really petty, but I just really like the character designs more. Maybe it's because they have, some of them have red hair, and I'm a Roy fanboy, and I like red hair. But aside from that, I'm going to have to actually go with Noor, and that's just because the gameplay sounds really tactical. Sounds like they tried to make it deeper and more interesting. Yeah, I just feel like, I guess as an older Fire Emblem fan, based off what they said, it's almost like they're pushing Noor on me. It's almost like, yo, this game is for you. So, like, don't go to the other route. It's like, I'm going to go to the other route, but I'll pick this one first. So, I'm thinking I'll go Noor first.
No, I'm totally in agreement, but mostly because a lot of people around the Fire Emblem community could tell you that I'm a big fan of darker storylines, and really what has been coming out as led me to believe that Noor is going to have, in addition to being more tactical, a bit more suited towards OG Fire Emblem fans, which I am, it's going to have more of a darker plot, and I'm curious about that. And of course, I'm going to play both sides. I'm incredibly, incredibly excited for both of the games to come out. Going to buy both of them day one. I think that goes for both of us.
Right.
But yeah, if I had to choose, I would probably be leaning towards Team Noor.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I didn't mention it as part of my reasoning, but it's definitely there. I love the darker stories. What it sounded like is Noor, you're gonna fight from the inside to try and fix Noor. Like Noor, we clearly saw, like, you know, the evil. There was like an evil figurehead in one of the trailers, and it was like, this guy's apparently part of Noor. And just in general, it feels like your guys are like, you know, everyone's like wearing black and purple, and you know, they're all like dark mages, and it's like, it's clearly has the stereotypes of, you know, Noor's like the more evil side. But I like the concept of working on the inside to kind of fix that. You know, it's more of, it reminds me more of like a civil war as opposed to, you know, a direct war where the enemy is a lot easier to deal with, because if you have an enemy who's clearly an enemy, you don't feel bad about fighting them, right? It's just sort of like, hey, I just got to beat up the bad guys. This is sort of like, I can't just beat up Noor because, like, they're my family. They raised me, right? I've got to somehow fix things without, you know, making everyone in my family hate me, you know? Or I just feel like there's more room for, you know, character development and conflict in that. And I'm really interested to see what they did with that. Hopefully it pans out.
I agree. And here's something I just thought of, actually, with our discussion went on. So Fire Emblem Awakening, you obviously had your avatar character, which was, you mean, you picked the name and look, and but it was pretty much just, I mean, a dude with a set personality. Here's right. my question, is that, is there going to be the kind of thing where, in this game, you're going to have your main character, your character, which is, like, the main character, but there's also another person in the kingdom who is just as important? Because that's the way they did in Awakening. It was just as much Krom's story as it was the Avatar story.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
What I'm wondering, is this game going to be about the Avatar, or is there going to be a Krom on each side, essentially?
Right. So what we've seen so far, so first of all, the nice thing about the Avatar is it's apparently going to have more customization features. So, like, you know, everyone hopefully won't have the same Avatar. That's ideally, but some people are just lazy. They just, like, pick the default avatar anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's still nice. You have more customization. And then the other thing is, you know, we have the, you know, the plot decisions. So there's two different routes, but how they described it is that even within the routes, you're going to have to make decisions. How you battle is going to affect things, and then there'll be, like, dialogue decisions that affect the story. What it really sounds like is the main player, or the main character, is really the, you know, the key figure in each side. And it seems like there are secondary figures. You remember the trailer, there was like the guy with the lightning sword, the Levin sword or whatever, and the other dude, Marks or whatever, that everyone's fanboying or fangirling over.
Hey, I'm a Marks fanboy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to play a role, but not quite as much as Krom. And one thing that leads to that is actually in one scene, I think that one person, I can't remember exactly how it works, but like Marks or someone was like talking to the player and he was like really upset with them. And it just seems like either way, they're the pivotal character. In the trailers, the bigger thing is in the trailers, we haven't seen anyone who could really fit that Krom role exactly. We haven't really seen the main character as much either, but that's because they're supposed to be the, you know, the changeable main character, right? So you can't really show the main character in those trailers. To finish my little spiel, because I know I'm talking a lot, the last thing I'd mention is Aqua. Remember the dancer girl?
Yep.
Yeah, so she apparently changes looks based on which route you take, which I find rather interesting, actually. Apparently, on one route, she's, like, white. The Hoshido route, she's white. And on the other one, she's, like, a blue. And I'm not really sure how she works, but she's a dancer character. And apparently she's a parallel or complement of some sort to the main character. So she's probably...
Maybe she's a chameleon.
Right. So she's probably... Shut up, Shu. She's probably going to have some important role. I just don't know if it's going to be quite on the level of, you know, Krom, who was, you know, he was literally the lord character of the game. You know, he wielded the, you know, the Sword Falcon. You know, he was a noble character, whereas Robin, or, you know, as the default name goes, the Avatar was sort of the, you know, the hero in the shadow who was just helping him, right? And he just kind of happened to play, you know, an important role here and there. But really, it was all about Krom, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Robin, the Avatar, was really just his friend, right? And he didn't really even come into play much into the story until later on. This seems different, on the other hand. I can't see, like, a dancer character like Aqua. I can't see her, you know, like, taking on armies and, you know, leading the people and whatever. I don't see her being, you know, the main character along with the Avatar. But that's just me. That's all just speculation. It could be who knows what.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point, and I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I was also getting the vibe that this was truly going to be the story of the main character. And I'm also, I mean, as a fan of games like Mass Effect and, you know, pretty much all everything that BioWare develops, I'm really interested to see just how deep these choices are going to go and how dramatically they're going to change the game, because they kind of had it in Awakening, but it wasn't, you know, super profound. It didn't feel like it made any difference.
Yeah, in some cases it didn't make any difference. And then, you know, it, like, you kind of felt it at the moment, But as a whole, it was almost like it was just thrown in there too, because, you know, oh, you know, we can totally code in a future to let the player, you know, choose some different options and stuff. You know, it's something that's appeared in Fire Emblem games a lot, right? The first Fire Emblem game I played, Fire Emblem 7, you had multiple dialogue options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it affected it. I would argue that FE7 had more important dialogue options than FE13. So really, Awakening wasn't profound, as you said. I hope this one is. My only concern with this is that at the beginning they talked a lot about like the decision making and crap. Remember that? Like when they first released the trailer?
Absolutely.
And, like, ever since they've mostly just been talking about, like, you know, the route split and the different futures and the new classes and everything. And that sounds great. But I am a little bit concerned, like, did they forget about what they promised with the story? You know? Like,
yeah.
They promised, like, you know, a really deep story, kind of like the Shin Megami Tensei games or in the Mass Effect games or something else where, you know, your decisions, like, seriously change the outcome. They're completely different endings. You know, character allegiances are dynamic. You know, maybe you could, you know, maybe even if you pick Hoshido route, people on Hoshido could be your enemy anyway.
Oh,
if you pick their own choices.
Yeah. Hey, I wouldn't be surprised if they went with something like that at all.
Yeah, you know, oh, they definitely have the potential to do it. I'm just curious, are they actually going to go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
Are they going to be passive about it? You know, are they going to be like, no, we're just okay with a route split and a few, you know, a few extra things that aren't really important, you know?
Right. And I mean, the fact that they're splitting the game up into two totally different games is giving me a little bit of hope because, I mean, they can fit a lot of content in those cartridges.
Right.
And if you've listened to the previous podcast, you'll know that we are big, not big, but we had a few criticisms about the plot in Awakening. So Blazer and myself are jonesing at the opportunity to play a Fire Emblem game that is maybe going to have a bit more of an in-depth plot.
Right. I would say the last plot that I truly enjoyed was Path of Radiance. And that wasn't to say that FE10s or 11s or 12s... Okay, 11's plot was pretty bad. It wasn't to say that FE10's plot or FE12's plot or FE13's was, like, terrible. You know, it was there. It did its job. But, like, on a second playthrough or just in general, it's not something I would brag about. I would never brag about that, you know, how epic the Awakening story was. It's not bad, but it left a lot to be wanted, you know, from a Fire Emblem game. I guess maybe we just have, you know, high expectations because we know they can do so much better. And the series has so much potential. You know, it's a war series where you have, instead of just like a party of, you know, four characters and, like, you know, the main bad guy in is a group of four villains, right? You've seen that trope, right? You know, like that. You know, instead of that, we have literally all of these different characters, each with their own stories and their own personalities and their own dynamics, and there's just so much potential. And they've done a great job in the past of putting this together to make, you know, a really great war game. Because really, that's what Fire Emblem is always about, right? There's always a war, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really about, you know, delving into that war so that it's not just, you know, a war between two armies. It's a war between, you know, a bunch of faced characters and a bunch of generics.
Yeah. Pretty much.
But maybe this one will be more interesting because we have... you know, we have, you know, both sides. So maybe we'll be fighting against non-generic characters. And by playing both routes, you know, they said that we'll gain more insight into the game as a whole. So I find that interesting.
Yep.
Definitely motivation to pick up both games.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, that's in my mind, yeah, the sign of a good game series is when they kind of give you a reward for playing multiple games in the series.
Yeah,
and that kind of plays into that, is your ability to just learn more about the world that you're playing in.
Oh yeah, and this doesn't apparently have any story related to the other games, which is another, and that's sort of, you know, a small thing. But Awakening, we didn't really see it at first, but it's actually connected to the FE1 universe and everything, right? It's connected to the world of Marth. It's just sometime after, so the world looks different and everything. But apparently this is a whole different game. But it seems like we really get to explore this new world that we're thrown in, and I like it. You know, you could consider Awakening to it had a whole different character cast, but, you know, in terms of the setting with the Falcon and Tiki and Naya and everything, you could kind of consider it a sequel to FE1 or FE3 in a way, couldn't you?
Yeah, kind of. So, I mean, it's way, way, way in the future, but right, it's definitely the same universe. The map is pretty much the same thing. Right. So, yeah,
I'm excited to see this. One last little tidbit, because I'm personally running out of things to talk about. I just found this interesting. The spellcasting effect in Awakening, it's a really small thing, but in the game, in the animations, the effect has, like, these little runes on the side. And it's actually the same thing used in Tellius's Fire Emblem games.
Really?
Which is really weird. And, you could try and, come up with something like, it's the same ancient text, therefore it must be connected to the Tellius world.
And, that's kind of been a theory that a lot of people have had, is that all the continents from all the Fire Emblem games are in the same world.
Right, yeah, and that's actually a plausible theory, because it never specifically says this is the entirety of the world. It's just sort of like, this is the world here, right?
This is the continent of Magavel, right, or
right,
whatever.
And you even have the bunny lagoons. I can't believe that was actually a thing. Funny thing about so this is totally off topic, but should you remember Feelover, who actually showed up on the forums recently?
Yes, I do remember him.
Why don't you tell about Bunny Lagoos, how funny that is? Cause,
God.
I don't even think I can hold a straight face.
Well, they're essentially, they're a lot like the Playboy bunnies, actually, but if they were real bunnies and could turn into bunnies, it's, I don't know if that's a plus for anybody, but not so much for me. It is a plus for one of our friends who, like Blazer mentioned, recently showed up on our forums after a long, long hiatus. I'm talking like 4 or 5 years.
FES forums are awesome. We're pretty tight-knit, so people are like that. They're like, oh, FES, my childhood. What about now? No, but this guy predicted Bunny Lagoons were going to be a thing back in, 2006 or something stupid when FE9 came out. He's like,
oh, so that's really how that started? He predicted
he was like, oh, I really wish, Bunny Lagoons were real. Because, there's, cat Lagoons, there's bird Lagoons, and there's lion Lagoons. Oh, I want, Bunny Lagoons.
I did not.
And then actually, 10 years later, they make Fire Emblem Awakening. It's a thing. I'm like, what in the world? I could have never predicted that Bunny Lagoons would actually be a thing.
I didn't know that he had actually predicted that it was going to happen.
Well, okay, maybe he didn't predict, but he came up with the idea, which in itself is I wasn't going ahead and predicting there was going to be raccoon lagoons or skunk lagoons. That's so random. That's so weird. And then it actually happened. What in the world?
I'm gonna be honest. I could not even tell that she was a bunny at first. In a way. I couldn't tell. I didn't know what she was.
If it weren't for all the carrot jokes, I'm not sure we would ever know for sure.
Yeah. I was at first I was like, what is she, a marmot or something? Oh, man. Ugh. Yeah, I think we covered pretty much everything that we were going to cover today.
Yeah, there's a lot of, more details, but you guys can look that stuff up online. I'm going to be honest. Serenna's Forest is pretty much the go-to place for all your, Fire Emblem nerd needs.
That is.
But if you want a really cool place to chill, we're currently talking about Fire Emblem. We're also talking about Shin Megami Tensei's Fire Emblem. We're curious what people think about the anime aspects of the game. Something that's been, mixed reactions a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard much about the game yet, but we're thinking it might show up at E3. So we're talking about that right now. If you guys want to come chat us up, feshrine.net/forums.
Yes, definitely.
We've also got the Twitter. I love talking to you guys on Twitter. Shu says hi sometimes.
I do say hi from time to time. That would be... Yeah, the handle is FEBuzz, if I'm correct.
I don't think it's that short. No, I don't know why it's not that short. It should be that short. But I think it's Fire Emblem Buzz.
Fire Emblem Buzz. So, yeah. At Fire Emblem Buzz, follow us on Twitter. And, stop by the forums.
Greatest Fire Emblem news.
If you're listening to this on YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel, please. To keep up with other podcasts, some other goodies that Blazer puts out every now and then.
Yep.
Sometimes
we just love talking with the community, seeing what's up, all that jazz, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's more fun that way, right?
For sure. Hey, everything is better with a tight-knit community, and that is what we're offering to you guys. So, come on. It would be rude to turn us down on this gracious offer that we're extending to you guys today. So, yeah.
Indeed, indeed. All right, but yeah, let's save the rest for another podcast. I'm pretty excited for Fire Emblem F, so we'll be keeping up with the news. It's coming out in a month. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. And, well, not that I'll be necessarily playing it in a month, but, you know.
I'm sure there are people that can't wait for it to happen in a month, but for the rest of us, we'll be waiting a bit longer.
Right. All right. I'm Blazer.
I am Shu.
Peace.